Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Let's do introductions around. We have some new faces tonight.
Yeah.
Judy.
Violet.
Wendy.
Max.
Jeffrey.
Forrest.
Erica.
And Angie. So, John, you came with Max?
Sean.
Sean, yeah. Good to see you again, Max.
Thank you.
Max is studying us. We're very proud to be studying. So we're talking about karma some more. Padagiri has a number of chapters in here about karma, and they get more and more interesting. So it's a good thing. The last one was about the law of causation, that causes and conditions all come together to create every single situation. That we can't even count all the different causes and conditions that create each situation. It's so complicated. And goes back to the very beginning of the beginning, when you start to think of your own cause and condition. You could say, well, it's when my mom and dad got together. But then you have to think it's when their mom and dad got together, because that made that to make you, but then you have to think of their mom and dad, and you have to go all the way back to the creatures in the ocean, and before that even, to wherever life came from outer space, to create us right now, right here. And even that is a very superficial way of talking about how complicated it really is. It's just incredible. And we try hard to understand it, and science is going deeply, deeply into it. But we know this much, just this much about ourselves, about where it came from, what it is. And sitting gives us a side of it that otherwise we don't have access to. Intellectually, we can think. And our minds are very smart and can put things together. This goes with this and this goes with this, but underneath there's something else going on that we can only arrive at, only touch when we sit down and be quiet. So Padagiri says to start on individual and non-individual karma. So he's saying there are two kinds of karma. There's your own personal individual karma, where you came from and what's making you, putting each one of us into where we are now. But there's the not individual karma, which is how everything is happening all around us. And you can imagine everything is happening all around us and in a myriad, myriad ways. And we're being affected by it. Of course. And we are affecting everything. So that's a very important point, that we ourselves have an effect on the world, as well as we are created by the world. It works both ways. He says the law of causation seems simple because actually the stream of causation is not so simple, because everything is interconnected. Based on the past, you can make a choice in the present, but you cannot make your choice just by yourself. You have to make your choice with everything, with all the sentient beings. He said, karma is big, it's vast. It comes from what you did with your own free will, But you did not create karma by yourself. Karma is something done by you with other people, society, all sentient beings, and all circumstances. So it's very complicated. Many people try to write their memoirs. And when you start to try to write your memoir, it's really remarkable experience, because once the memories start to come, it all begins to seem relevant. Well, this happened and this happened, and oh, I forgot all about that one. And then you're all done and you think, yes, but there was so much more. So much more that I couldn't even possibly begin to say. So he says everything has both kinds of karma, individual and not individual. There is a certain character in everything. So he says a cup is different from the table it's sitting on. The cup is a cup. The book is the book. It's each individual has its own karma, as Thich Nhat Hanh always points out. The book is made of many, many elements. It's trees. It's made out of the paper. It's made out of cloth. It's out of cloth, too, and water. It's rivers in it. It's rain in it. It's dirt in it. It's all the elements that make up every single thing that we know, including you and me. He says, for a human being, having two kinds of karma means that if you do something in any of the three categories of action, acting in body, speech, and thought, you create not only your own life, but also the life of your family, your community, your culture, and all human society. So, we often especially try to have some kind of effect. We know this about our life in many ways, and we want to have some effect on our life. We look at how things are in our society, for instance, and can become very concerned about society and see things that need to be taken care of. And so we begin to reach out and enact our life in our life, in the whole life around us. So our karma and everything's karma is all working together. The more we reach out and the more we make that effort, the more we stir things up and create our own life and our own world. We do have an effect as we are being affected. When you develop your own individual character in the broad perspective of not individual karma, then your personality develops very gently in a humble way. If you want an American way of Buddhism, he says, to develop naturally, pay attention to the entire cosmic situation. Nevertheless, you have to develop your own character. How? Humbly. We're still wondering what the American way of Buddhism is. We're not even calling it Buddhism so much. But just practice, meditation practice, although it's based on the teachings of Buddha. You pay attention to the entire cosmic situation. We have to be careful how we act and how we develop our lives, because a human being is a peaceful being, and also, he says, something stinky. I like that. We have to know this. This is really important information. We are very peaceful and beautiful people, and there's something stinky in us too. So he says, he points out, Thich Nhat Hanh says, breathing in, I calm my mind and body. Breathing out, I smile. So beyond our intellectual ideas, let's be peace. That's our practice. Day by day, we have to build up peace within the complicated existence of human beings. He said, this is our peace work. This is our spiritual work. So then he makes another distinction about karma. He calls it manifested and unmanifested. Manifested, it comes up in some kind of action. Unmanifested means it's unborn but waiting somewhere inside. According to Buddhist psychology, he says, karma is divided into manifested karma and unmanifested. Manifested karma is something that appears in a moment and disappears. Human action appears on the surface of life, and the next moment, it's gone. Our whole life is that way. We can see that. Moment by moment, we're here and there and doing this and that. And even when we go to bed and go to sleep, we're still moment by moment by moment. It's different, changing constantly. Zen teachers sometimes say, just be present here and now. They often say that, actually. So you may think this means that when you do something, you should just take care of human action that appears on the surface. But that is a really messy way of life. If you pay attention only to what manifests on the surface of life, you don't understand human beings. Because there is something else, unmanifested karma. It means our obvious life, our surface life. We all know that we have another life going on inside. Sometimes we're aware of it, sometimes we're not. Sometimes we're surprised by our dreams, for instance. Or when we're doing some kind of art, something comes out of us that we didn't even recognize until it came down on the page. Unmanifested karma occupies the basis of human existence. Whatever you do, your action leaves behind a kind of smell in the depth of human life. We have to take responsibility for our behavior, whatever it is, good or bad, right or wrong, because even though our actions disappear from the surface of life, the smell of what we have done is still there as unmanifested karma. If you don't understand that there is unmanifested karma, you can't understand the depth of human life, and you don't realize the importance of your actions. Everyone carries the unmanifested karma of human action from the beginningless past as a sort of inheritance or property. It's not something like original sin. It's completely nothing. You simply can't put any label like good or bad or right or wrong on unmanifested karma because it is completely beyond our moral sense. So I use the term neutral nature. This karma is always present in your life, stored in your body and mind. If it doesn't appear on the surface, no one knows it's there. You don't know either, so it doesn't bother you. The fact that unmanifested karma doesn't bother you is its neutral nature. He says, no one knows how to open the door to that big storehouse of karma at the depth of human life. But there is something that can open the door, time and occasion. When the time is ripe and conditions are arranged, something happens. The door suddenly opens and bubbles come up to the surface and human action appears. We just at Chikoji last Friday had an ordination ceremony. The folks came up from San Diego, the other floating Zendo, and a lot of people came from the old days, the olden days with Koban, and we had a wonderful ceremony at Chikoji when, before taking the precepts, which is the essence of the practice of the ordination, the very first thing you say is, all my ancient wrong actions arising from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion, based on mind, speech, and body, all together I now fully avow. You don't say, I was bad and now I'm going to be good. It doesn't say I'm a horrible person. It doesn't say anything like that. It just says, this is how it is with all of us, and this is how it is with me. And having to take that recognition into consciousness is how we then take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So it's a wonderful beginning, and it's what Katagiri is trying to say here, that we are, as human beings, very imperfect creatures, and that if we try to pretend our situation, try to pretend to be something that we're not, it's a terrible mistake. It creates deep suffering for us and for everything around us. It's a little funny to call it unmanifested karma, but maybe you can feel that we inherit. In fact, we were talking about this before, but we're discovering now in science that we inherit genetic memory. And he's talking about the genetic memory that we're inheriting that can include what happened to our grandparents and to their parents. And those somehow, and nobody knows how, but they're beginning to trace them, shows up in our life. So we inherit all the ancient wrong actions. That's what karma is, the unconscious karma that we inherit, as well as our wide awake place where we mostly are. And sitting, sometimes we become very much aware of the mystery of our mind and our body, and how much is going on that we really don't know. How much we can't recognize, although it has echoes of familiarity sometimes. Unmanifested karma, he says, has a neutral nature. It's not good or evil, it's quiet. If you don't touch it, it doesn't appear. You don't touch it means that you don't create the time, occasion, and conditions for it to appear. If conditions aren't arranged, unmanifested karma doesn't appear. When you are always trying to do something good, very naturally, you don't create conditions where you want to do something wrong. In this way, you store good karma and bad karma doesn't appear. Unmanifested karma is stored into the future, so we should do something good helping people. Then our action leaves an impression on our life that we carry toward the future. If you create good karma every day, you store good karma in your life, but it can't appear until time and conditions are arranged. They may be arranged naturally or arranged by you, but when time and conditions are arranged, karma appears. It's really the source of individual life within us, and simultaneously it's not ours at all. Through spiritual practice, you can deeply understand the presence of karma in human life. You see that you exist right in the middle of a huge world that is appearing and disappearing from moment to moment, and you realize that your life is connected, interconnected with all beings. Then you want to take good care of your interconnected life, and you begin to think deeply on how to use your consciousness, your will, and your determination to create good karma and to create opportunities for good karma to appear in the human world. So maybe there's time that we might want to talk about this a little bit more. Are there questions? Yop?
Thanks. I was just a little unclear on what he means when he says when we do good things, we store good karma, especially how it seems a little bit contradictory to what we studied with Yu Nang, who, when he's speaking with the emperor, the big insight is that it's not something you accumulate.
Oh, not merit.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it wasn't karma, it was merit.
Okay.
So merit is the kind of prize that you get for being good.
Mm-hmm.
And Bodhidharma said, no, there's no merit. He said, I built all these beautiful temples, and I've been supporting all these priests, and I'm doing all these good things. And he said, what is my merit? Thinking, oh, look at me, I'm so great. And Bodhidharma said, no merit. Sorry. So merit is different. Karma is in your own life, how you navigate your life, how you act it. It's an action, it's not an idea. Merit is an idea, and I don't even think there is such a thing as merit. You know, the Tibetans say, if there is merit, let us dedicate it to the benefit of all beings. And at the end of every service, we do too. We offer the benefit. If there is merit, let the merit go and make everybody happy.
Well, so then back to storing good karma that he keeps referring to. Is that more something like momentum, or stuff? I'm still struggling to understand.
Well, I'm not sure. Actually, that's his words. And he's pointing to Alaya Vijnana, which is called the storehouse consciousness,
right,
in which everything resides, everything that we've ever done, the good stuff and the bad stuff, and it's totally neutral. It's just in us. And so we can operate, we do operate, we act and act our life either consciously out of there, or once we become aware that it open the door, as he says, and see all the various myriad possibilities in our own mind and body that we become more and more aware of, then we make choices. And it's about the choices that we make. How do we choose, and on what basis do we choose? And if we make wholesome choices for the benefit of ourselves and then everyone, then our life and world begins to thrive. If we unconsciously choose crazy ways or selfish ways, then our whole life, not only our own individual life, but everything around us is crazy and selfish. So everything that we decide and choose affects everything. So when we open the door, we are careful to recognize, and that's why it's important to recognize all of it, so that we make intelligent choices and generous choices. Thank you,
Thanks.
Forrest?
So much of what I hear is so different than what I was taught and transmitted by you in the teaching of karma and doing good. In my experience, good is a creation of my mind. It's something that I'm attaching to in a moment. And so if I think I'm doing something good, at the same time it's good, I'm creating an idea of something bad in my world. And so if I'm going through my life doing good things, then my opposite, or the idea of a bad thing, is out there somewhere waiting to appear to me to show me that it's attachment to something being less than perfect, something being on a scale of which I'm the judge. And it's shown to me that in a moment, it's for me to, and I think this is what maybe Katagiri wants to say, or as you said, he's trying to say, is that there's an authentic self that can appear. That when we're fully aware of all the different dynamics of what's showing up in our lives, we can be authentic. We can show up in a way that feels good to us, but isn't an idea of doing something good. And I think that we kind of have the same, because when I hear the words, it feels a little to me where I don't want to do good things. I don't want to be someone who's perceived as doing good in my life. I don't want to feel like I'm a good person. I want to feel good. You know, I want to feel like me. I want to show up in a way that feels like Forrest is, like, really Forrest, and not having all these things get in the way of that, which is the kind of karmic aspect of what I think he's talking about. But the idea of doing good and accumulating good karma, to me, feels like it's not the dharma. It feels like it's Katagiri having something coming up there, to be honest. Because I don't, like, it's the accumulation of something, what? You know, like, who decides it's good? You know, I don't want to carry around anything with me. You know, I want to show up in each moment not thinking that I've gotten something that I've, like, been building up over time. I want to show up in each moment and be free to fully express myself and to be responsive to what's, like, showing up to me. And in that, it feels good to me to be that. And so it's a little tricky with the words. I feel like, I just feel like there is something said about that we're not perfect, and I'm like, whoa, like, I think we are, though. You know, I think that we are.
Perfect. It works both ways. That's the problem.
Yeah.
It's both true.
Yeah.
And you're expressing the other side, which is absolutely right.
Yeah.
But that's it's a very tricky way of thinking without bringing in the other side. You need both sides in order to navigate your life without coming to too much grief.
Because even if I'm perfect, there's still something for me to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
And to recognize what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And be very discriminating and careful about what you do. Discrimination is really important. And you don't, it's neutral. He says it's neutral. It's not good or bad. So you're not you're not picking out the good stuff, but you're just figuring out every moment how to do this.
The way he wrote it feels to me like it's for American Buddhists.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. The
Yeah.
whole thing, it, everything he's written in here is from a very Japanese point of view, and so it's a little bit rigid, but it's also very helpful, I think, to remember that that side exists and it's important to know about it. But thank you very much for bringing that up.
Yeah, it just like brings up a lot for me because in my life when I think I'm doing something good, that bites me in
Oh, I agree. It really does, right?
the
It really does.
Thank
Ooh
you.
la la, yes. Don't be too good. Anything else? Wendy?
Genetic inheritance that we exist, it sounds kind of pessimistic to me, given the people that are being growing up amidst war
Yes.
and the inheritance of slavery and Jim Crow and all of that. It just seems hopeless
Well,
to me.
I think so too. I don't think it's hopeless, but I do think it explains a lot.
True.
That there's so much PTSD in the world from the very beginning. If you read history, there's just rape and pillage going on almost all the time somewhere in human life. And people are desperately panicked and frightened and hungry and homeless and all those things, all through history. So it seems that we've inherited that side of things. And it explains a lot of how we understand our life in the world. And that we have intelligence, this kind of intelligence, intellectual intelligence, means that we can actually begin to see that. Not just live from the belly side and the back of the brain and just instinctively try to figure it out, but just really pay close attention and see how it is. I have a weird story about that of a friend who's grew up feeling very strange about his life and never understood what it was, and met somebody who said that he could read the past of people's family and how it affected. And he read my friend, and he said, "There was a murder in your family." And he said, "No, there was never a murder in my family, no way." And he went back and he checked it out, and his great-grandfather killed somebody. And the effect on the family was huge, and it affected his parents enormously. And he never knew anything about it, but he was always disturbed. So he told me that years ago, before they began to talk about the genetics of it. But once I heard that, I thought, oh, I know somebody who has experienced that.
I met a woman who took me on an experience going through epigenetics, I think it's called, where she, I met her at an airport and we just sat down and she went through my genetics, like my history. And she was like, there's like something in the room that has been carried through the women of your family. And after realizing that there was a, not a curse, but like a karmic thing happening with the women's reproductive systems in my family, that they all ended up having to get some part of their reproductive system removed. And after going through this process with her and then going on my own journey of healing myself, I'm not at risk of any of those issues. like all the other women in my family are. And so I think it's pretty interesting to see like that is actually something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's a
It
random
really.
event where she's just taking me through this experience, reading my family history. That's ridiculous.
Wow.
Yeah, really, really cool.
Yeah. So much we don't know. So much. Well, we will continue. There's more. Before we break, I wanted to share this with you all, anybody who wants to borrow it or have it actually and pass it around. It's called Sakya Shakya Dita. It's the International Association of Buddhist Women. And they've been going for 25 years now, I think. It's an international group of nuns and lay people and anybody interested who can go to these international meetings. They're supposed to be really fabulous. And they do them all over the world. And then they publish this little booklet after the meeting and little snips of what people said, and it's a very lovely thing to read. So it's here. I'll just leave it for somebody to pick up and pass around. Are there announcements?
No, I don't have any. What is your March schedule look like?
I have no idea. I don't know. I think it's just normal.
Okay.
We'll have a half day sit in a couple of weeks.
It's actually a full day.
Oh, one day sit.
Yeah.
Okay.
17th, I think.
17th, Saturday. Yeah.
A just special day or something?
Not really. It's just for the sheer joy of the ability to sit for a whole day. Well, let's sit for 1 minute.